In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose for Thursday, November 3rd, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter in the 3 o'clock hour today, and I'm pleased to welcome URS to the program today, Mark Gray and Tim May. That'll be easy for me to remember, gentlemen. I appreciate you, both of you being here. Thanks for coming in. It's good to have you. Let's start, Mark, with tell me what URS does for government clients.
Well, let me, Francis, let me focus on my group in particular, which is the Information Solutions Group. The Information Solutions Group is the newest group in our federal practice, and it really is comprised of our recent acquisition of Aptus in June of this past year. URS is a broad engineering, construction, and technical services company with a large footprint in the federal space, but one notable place where we were understated was in our IT services, and the acquisition of Aptus in June of this year really filled a hole in our portfolio quite nicely.
How did the technology piece fit with the business that you were already doing in the federal space?
Well, it fit well from the sense that a lot of the business that we were doing before in the federal space was advising our DOD and federal civilian agency clients on technology from a management standpoint, from a systems engineering standpoint, et cetera. So from a technological perspective, it was not a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
From an information technology perspective, a little bit different, a little bit more focused since we were providing IT solutions. Aptus is an IT solutions, IT services provider.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different aspect of technology. But from an overall technological standpoint, it fits very well with what our mainstream federal business is.
How did that fit with what your clients were asking you to do or work that you were already doing? And they would say, can you help us with this other issue? Or was it more a case where you just saw work that was available rather than specific clients asking you or pulling you in a particular direction?
A little bit of both, but I think the main draw was from our current clients.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of that is a real tribute to the services, the folks providing the services that we provided. Our clients would be very pleased with those services and say, hey, can you help us in the areas of cybersecurity
mm-hmm.
or in the areas of C4I consultation and that kind of thing? And that led us down the path of realizing we needed to bolster our offering there. If we
mm-hmm.
were getting it from existing clients,
yeah.
we knew we were missing part of the market, not to mention the larger part of the market that's, you know, a multi- you know, arguably between $50 and $100 billion market when you characterize the federal IT space.
Mm-hmm. The whole mergers and acquisitions market has been particularly hot over the last, well, especially the last year, but the last couple of years. When I'm not asking particularly about the Aptus acquisition, but just M&A in general, as you keep your eye out, as your company keeps your eye out for opportunities. There seem to be two schools of thought about M&A. One is we're going to grow the bottom line by buying it rather because what we're doing now we're kind of maxed out. And the other school of thought seems to be more along the lines of what you're talking about, which is this is a business that we're not in at all and we're going to go into this area of business because it's complementary. Was that the theory that you were looking at when you specifically went after or started to talk to Aptus, or was it more a matter of we just want to see what's in the marketplace and see what all's going on out there?
No, we clearly were in pursuit of the capabilities and offerings that Aptus brought to bear. It
mm-hmm.
was not a matter of going out, making an acquisition, attaching it, and hoping to just reap the top and or bottom line benefits.
Right.
We needed those capabilities and we very purposefully went out there with the intention of saying, look, we're very, from a corporate standpoint, we're a very broad-based company with our hands into a lot of different clients in the federal space and the commercial space as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we needed the capabilities and offerings that Aptus brought to bear from an offering standpoint, not from a attaching it on and really help us with our immediate with our top or bottom line.
Yeah. Tim, tell me about your business makeup, where you're doing most of your business,
sure.
DOD versus civilian.
If you take a look at the mix inside of Aptus, we were about a 60-40 play 60% inside of DOD, 40% inside of FedCiv. It was a pure federal IT play, not in the state and local, not in the commercial market. So it was purely federal. Now, if you take a look at the competencies that we brought to the table for our clients, we put them into five different categories. One was certainly around program management type capabilities. Secondly, what we consider to be enterprise infrastructure support. That was the second. Third was software systems engineering. The fourth was around cyber, IT security, cybersecurity. And then the fifth was around network engineering, network management type capabilities.
I want to start with program management. Talk about that, because there are plans and memos and lists of priorities and so on, and they all seem to touch program management regardless of whether you're talking about an IT project or some other kind of work. What are your clients asking you most about program management solutions? What are the things that are the hardest for them, maybe continuing to be hard or in an evolution process? What are they asking you for help with when it comes to program management?
Yeah, I'll take that on first. I think it's really a basic requirement. It's back to the basics. I mean, fundamentally, program management's all about cost, schedule, and performance. And I think really what it is, you know, the federal space has gone through an evolution of earned value management and a lot of things that have been applied in a lot of different ways, some of which weren't necessarily the right fit. So from our standpoint, whether it's the advisory services that URS more broadly provides to its clients or the fundamental program management services that we in the Information Solutions Group afford to our IT clients, it really is back to the basics of, you know, we want to understand the program with enough granularity that we understand the requirements, that our requirements are mapped, are achievable within the schedule that we have, that we're going to have the performance that we want, and we're not going to allow ourselves to creep that performance requirement during the evolution of the program, and that we keep it within the budget that we set out.
Yeah.
So it's not an overly glamorous answer, but that's really what we're seeing in the marketplace.
Well, and you use the word creep that I hear an awful lot when it comes to project management, program management, because that throws off the vendors, and the agencies just kind of look around, and it seems like it's business as usual in enough agencies that requirements change and evolve and creep, to use your term, which is an accurate one, I think. It's interesting to me to hear that that's still something that the agencies are struggling with. After all, as I mentioned, lots of guidance, lots of memos, lots of GAO reports, and so on.
And part of that, too, is we have a responsibility on the industry side as well. You know, a lot of times when you hear requirements creep right away, you go to the customer and say, hey, the requirements, you know, the customer's forcing these creeping requirements upon us. But it's our responsibility to train our program managers to understand that when that happens, they need to stop. They need to explain the implications of those requirements creeps in terms of cost, schedule, and performance, and address those appropriately and early on. And so we have a responsibility to bear there as well. And I think our program managers really get that. And I think ultimately the customers really appreciate the fact that we're willing to stop, explain that, explain the implications, and come up with a solution together on how to move forward.
Well, that's an interesting response. How receptive are your customers, are the agencies usually, to that kind of a reaction when they want to, when they decide, well, maybe we should get it to do this?
As you might imagine, it varies by client. I mean, the clients that we've had for a long time and have built, longer, sought more solid and deeper trusting relationships with, it goes over very well, and there's really not many rounds back and forth. For newer clients sometimes, and particularly very demanding clients, it may be a bit more challenging. But, you know, the appropriate course of action there is to stop and to explain and do it in objective terms so that it's understood. And then if they're still insistent upon that happening, we have to be insistent upon that being mechanized in the right way going forward.
We're going to continue our conversation in just a minute. We've got to take a break on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests are Mark Gray and Tim May from URS on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
Previously on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, there was a special panel conversation about the F-35 program, discussing the cost of the program. Tom Burbidge, Executive VP and GM of F-35 Program Integration.
When you talk about cost on a major complex weapon system like this, you tend to talk about the acquisition, the price. In reality, that's only a small part of the overall lifecycle cost of the airplane. We have the development program, which is probably the most comprehensive and complex in the history of development, with a highly common family of three airplanes going through a very long and intensive test program. We have the production facilities that we've now put in place around the world to support high-rate manufacturing and, again, capturing those economies of scale. And then you have the all-important cost of ownership and cost of operations throughout the life cycle. I would offer there's even a fourth element, and that's the what we currently do on a regular basis, day in and day out, our long-term peacekeeping or combat operations with all three U.S. services and our allies.
To listen to the whole program, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword F-35.
When it comes to your health and that of your family, you want security and peace of mind. That's why more federal employees have chosen the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program for over 50 years. And it has one of the largest networks of doctors and hospitals. Who knew? That's the security of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. To find out more, visit whonew.fepblue.org. Or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday's Federal Drive. What do you need to know about your choices for health, dental, and vision insurance during the upcoming open season? And the FCC is gearing up for the first test of the nationwide emergency alert system. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out, federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests on Industry Chatter today, Tim May and Mark Gray, both of URS. And we've talked about on this radio station ad nauseum the issues with the budget, both with the effects of the super committee on the agency budgets, then the situation with Congress. We're already a little bit over a month into the fiscal year, and still no budgets bills passed for this year. What kind of effect, Tim, does that have on the way that your plan, the way that you plan submitting bids, going after business at the agencies, sure, both defense and civilian?
Well, I hit a couple things. One is what we saw in 2010. We our business cadence in 2010. We did quite a few bids. Mm-hmm. We did much more than we did and have done in 2011. I would say we're probably down 20%, and a lot of it just has to do with the acquisitions haven't been released, mm-hmm, when we thought they'd be released. So we saw that. Second thing we saw was normally towards the end of the government's fiscal year, August-September timeframe, we generally see a number of task orders released against our GWAC IDIQ contracts. This year we saw that lessen as well compared to 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two aspects we saw. You know, the less bidding, less amount of work coming on. The other thing that we have seen is the actual awarding has moved far to the right. We get quite a bit of extend your pricing, extend your bids for another, you know, 60, 90 days, whatever it might be. So we have a number of what I'll call a stacked up bids that we've already submitted waiting to be awarded.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of has moved everything, I say, to our right, and it also moved, you know, our budgeting forecasting projections slightly to the right right as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee anything that will change that in the foreseeable future, other than if Congress got it together and got these bills passed so the agencies could get kind of back on a more normal schedule?
Well, that certainly is critical. And to go back to what we've had discussed internally is how do you address that?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you address that, I believe, is to go back to where you currently have existing client relationships and existing contracts. Where there's potential ceiling or potential to be able to do additional work underneath that, mm-hmm. for the reason of achieving mission objectives of our clients, not just to get new work, but
sure.
What is the objective of the client? What are they not getting done today because of the slowdown in the acquisitions or the acquisition timeframes? Well, so what can be done underneath the current scope of the contract in order to achieve their business objectives? So those are some of the things that we're looking at internally.
And I imagine that pressure is probably hardest on the acquisition workforces at the agencies because they've got to push through this work on totally different schedules than the system was set up to do, right, Mark?
Yeah, you're right, Francis. And, you know, one of the things I would add to what Tim said is that if agencies would become less averse to using existing vehicles, and there are plenty of vehicles out there,
mm-hmm.
that is the number one element in my mind that could really alleviate that pressure on the acquisition workforce right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's slightly better than it was a couple of years ago in terms of less aversion, but it's nowhere where it needs to be. There are plenty of vehicles out there, but each agency has its own preference on mm-hmm. certain vehicles that are acceptable to use and others that are not.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a lot of problems and exacerbates the situation already there because of the existing pressures on the acquisition workforce.
Well, we talked about on this station the last couple of days quite a bit about the departure of Dan Gordon at OFPP, and that's one of the issues that he tried to address is you've really got to make a good business case before you set up some whole new structure because we already have plenty of structures for you to buy stuff in the government, not just widgets, it's services too. Do you see a response from the agents, a positive response to that effort from the agencies to say, yeah, you know what, maybe we should take a second look at what's already out there before we try to start our own deal. Is that actually happening, or is that still kind of in the talking stages?
In some cases, yes. And again, some of that responsibility lies on us in industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's our willingness to educate them on what's available and to help build the business case for that. And when I'm talking about that, the vehicles I'm talking about are competitively awarded vehicles
mm-hmm.
that also have competitively awarded task orders on those vehicles. So the competition lives on. It's not a matter of not having sufficient competition at
right.
all.
It's just the competition's already been done, and the agencies have the flexibility to move forward right away.
And so you have, when I look at, we're always reevaluating our arsenal of contract vehicles. And truth be known, when you look at what we have today, and I'll just talk about the Information Solutions Group at Aptus, we have a very strong arsenal of contracting vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But we still find countless examples of where we go, and, you know, two or three or four deep into that arsenal, and they're not acceptable within a given agency.
Mm-hmm.
So it in some agencies, it's a lot better. In others, we're not quite there yet. But I think if there were a wider acceptance to really utilize the vehicles that are out there and not to reinvent the wheel, that would really alleviate pressure on the acquisition workforce. And it would help us. It would speed up acquisition timeframes. It would lower investment on our part. It would be positive on both sides without a doubt.
Where do you think that push should come from? Does that come from inside the agencies? Does it come from OMB? Does it come from someplace else to change it in the way that to get agencies to get on board with the vehicles that are already around?
I think
around?
It comes from all the above. I mean, OMB has to be an advocate of that, but I think the agency leadership does as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be open-minded to say, look, there are plenty of ways to buy what we need out there, and there are plenty of ways that afford us ongoing competition. So we shouldn't turn a blind eye. If there's an opportunity to go out and run a very competitive procurement and do so with a 30-day or less turn, what's not to like about that? But it's almost as though when that happens, you know, there's a stall and there's like, it's almost too good to be true.
I was just going to say, it's like that old line.
That's that stalling phenomenon that's a bit mind-boggling. So,
well, when you run into that kind of situation, what's usually the reason that somebody gives you about why we can't go with something that you're already on?
It usually is the adage that it's our policy that we have to use, you know, a vehicle that's from that particular service, if we're talking about a service branch of the Department of Defense or within a particular agency in the federal civilian space. So it's usually locally imposed.
It's just kind of a variation on the old line. That's how we've always done it.
And I'm not even sure it's a hard and fast requirement in many cases. I just think it's there. It's not challenged enough, I should say.
The other element of Dan Gordon's tenure that's kind of his signature initiative is Mythbusters, and the idea, the primary one of those that interested me is the idea that it really is okay for agencies to talk to vendors at various points in the process. I want to talk about that a little bit and any progress that you might be seeing there when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests on Industry Chatter today, Mark Gray and Tim May of URS, when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm, and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Chances are you walk by someone every day living with epilepsy, yet you probably don't even know it.
In between seizures, many patients look like you and me. They speak normally, they behave normally, they function normally, but when that seizure occurs, they don't function normally.
Dr. Jerry Shee is a neurologist and epilepsy expert at Mayo Clinic. He says epilepsy can severely impact your independence. You may not be able to drive or hold certain jobs. It can even affect your relationships.
That young adolescent who has epilepsy may not want to go out on a date, may not want to go out with friends, not because he or she has a seizure, but is afraid that they may have a seizure.
The good news is that medications are very effective at helping most people control the disorder. Surgery and other treatments can help even more. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Heart to Heart. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in the United States. If you're listening to this with another person, it's likely that one of you have at least one of the three major risk factors for heart disease and stroke, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Amy Valderrama is at the CDC.
Major risk factors are uncontrolled high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and smoking.
Adults should have their blood pressure checked at least once every 2 years. You should have your cholesterol checked at least every 5 years. Living a healthy lifestyle helps too.
You can eat a healthy diet, which is low in saturated fat and cholesterol, high in fiber, and low in salt. You can maintain a healthy weight, don't smoke, and limit your alcohol use. And if you already have high blood pressure and high cholesterol, follow your healthcare provider's instructions.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today, as every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. My guests are Tim May and Mark Gray of URS, and talking about doing business in government, in the government space. And we were talking a little bit during the break about the question that I mentioned before we went to break that I wanted to ask you about, and that's the idea of collaboration with agencies, as Dan Gordon laid it out in his Mythbusters campaign. A lot of misperceptions out there about what people can and can't do, and he was talking about it right up until the very end of his he's actually technically still there, but I saw him just last week at the Coalition for Government Procurement dinner, still talking about Mythbusters, talking about the importance of agencies talking to as many vendors as they can before, during, and after to make sure that they know what's going on, what the possibilities are. Tim, what are you seeing as you're talking to your clients and to potential clients? Is that getting better? Is what Dan is saying printing in people's brains?
To a degree. Okay, I'm going to give you a couple different examples. One is, this isn't a commercial for VA, but VA just recently did a large-scale procurement called T4.
Mm-hmm.
Took a while to get out, but I will tell you that from an industry, we did not participate on that bid for a number of reasons. But we did observe what was going on, and there was a number of industry days that the VA conducted to communicate their desires, their approaches to the acquisition. They had a number of sessions with the vendor community. They were open to sitting down to have discussions, not in an open forum, but in a more of a private forum. And then they also had the platform in order to be able to exchange, RFI comments, RFC comments, to hopefully get both parties to understand what the direction is. So I would, hats off to the VA for what they did there, and I think that was a good approach. Now, I'll go on a DOD side. We recently evaluated another RFP that we're looking at bidding. It was interesting because in the solicitation itself, it actually put a time period on which they would engage with the contractor community in discussions. They gave you a number to call. They gave you a person to call to set up a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, we were very surprised, pleasantly surprised, that the government was actually offering that in a solicitation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it universal? Is it across the board? The answer is no. There's still the time where you get the pushback, can't talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, as Dan said, we're all very much aware that in order to get what you need, there has to be this open communication, this collaboration, in order for both parties to understand what the desire is, what the capability is on both parts.
Well, talk about your experience then, take it out another level. And when you met with that on that particular instance, What are those meetings like? I mean, I would imagine that the potential customer comes away with, I mean, they didn't just meet with you. They met with other people, and they understood then what the possibilities were for what they were trying to do.
Yes, and some of it is around the way the acquisition was being conducted.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the number of past performances that are sought, the format, just something simple as the format, the past performance, and talk about you could use CPARS for it versus having to do, you know, mass mailings to a number of handful of our clients because the clients get inundated with past performance questionnaires. So the use of CPARS, that's one example.
Mm-hmm.
Other examples is the dialogue around SLAs. Instead of having an open number of, you know, we expect this number of FTEs or something along that lines, we talk about put in SLAs to say, this is what I expect from a service level, and this is what I expect from the contractor versus the number of engineers that they want, you know, sitting on their floor.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what have you seen as far as, in particularly in DOD, because that's where the biggest changes seem to be happening in contracting because of budget issues and a lot of other things. What trends have you seen there as far as the kinds of procurements they're putting out, what they're doing, that kind of thing?
Without a doubt, at the top of the list is a migration to a low price, technically acceptable environment.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's not that in and of itself is bad, but it's a problem when that's not explicitly stated as a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
If that's indeed what the procurement warrants or that's what the procurement agency desires, that's fine. But oftentimes we find that's not explicitly stated. It's under a best value moniker. And it's not obvious until after the fact that that's really what was important. And that, you know, Francis, that doesn't benefit us. It doesn't benefit the government at all, because the result of that is you truly, more often than not, don't get the best value that you're after.
I would think that from their perspective, they don't necessarily get the best offer that you might have to give either, because maybe the service would be provided differently, but it could be provided more competitively and still meet what they're trying to achieve. So it seemed like they're potentially missing opportunities.
Oh, without
there.
A doubt. It drives you to a certain workforce mix that mm-hmm. otherwise it wouldn't. If there were elements of innovation required or elements of higher level support and consultation under a true best value procurement, you're going to bid a different mix of a workforce than you are otherwise. So it definitely drives your bidding strategy, and more importantly than that, it drives what you get in execution, both from a delivery standpoint on industries, from industry's perspective, and on the government standpoint from the services they receive.
Now, if this was the old Groucho Marx show, the bird would come down, and because you said the I word, the word of the day is innovation. And I wonder how agencies are getting at asking for innovation in maybe a more specific way than they just say, I want you to show me something innovative. Because for a long time, it seemed like that's what the concept of innovation was. Show us something neat and different we haven't seen before, but there's no guidance to how to do it. You've got this whole wide roadway to explore and makes it difficult, I guess, to try to focus it.
In our business, it's around two aspects. One is security, information mm-hmm. technology security,
mm-hmm.
and the other one's cost savings. So if your innovations really apply to either one of those, you have a very good chance of being successful, particularly mm-hmm. on the cost savings side. You know, one of the top initiatives we've had going on for a while is with our cloud computing capability, and that's something that, you know, really at the heart of that, there are two major issues. One is the savings that cloud computing affords you.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, hand in hand with that is this notion of how secure is cloud computing. So in our business, innovation surrounding both efficiencies and savings on that standpoint, and as well as security, are the two areas that we're really focused on and that the government's really asking for.
Where are we on the education line in cloud computing? Are we far enough down the line where you're not answering the questions anymore? What is it? What are the benefits? That kind of thing. Or is there still a little bit of that out there?
Oh, no, there's still quite a bit of that out there. And again, it depends on agency to agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't even say agency to agency as much as the people inside the agency. We are seeing the adoption. Now it's in prototypes, it's in pilots,
mm-hmm.
it's coming in short bursts. The biggest cloud opportunity out there right now is around email as a service inside of GSA.
Mm-hmm.
However, the bulk of the opportunities we're seeing, they are pilots, they are prototypes. probably in the past 3 months, we have put about 10 different clients under contract where we're providing cloud computing services.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a great deal of education that is required, and some of it is just the fundamentals. What is it? How can it be used? Is there a difference between cloud computing and hosting? Is there a difference between, you know, cloud computing and and outsourcing your data center? So mm-hmm. there's still quite a bit of education around that. And I also want to go after, because if you take a look at cloud computing as an innovation, the one thing that I think that we in the industry have to also realize is that oftentimes innovation up front, it costs you a little more money. There is a little bit more of a spend to introduce a new technology, a new business process. Over time, you'll see the decreasing costs. That's what you hope to see. You hope to see efficiencies over time. But there's a, you know, upfront burst that you will have to spend in order to get innovation introduced back into an organization.
Budget-wise, though, are most agencies comfortable with the idea of that when they're in the tight situation that they're in? Are they able to look at the life cycle cost of that spend rather than just what's going to be happening this fiscal year?
That's a great question, and I think the answer is that not entirely. And what I mean by that, and I think it manifests itself in the way that cloud's being bought in this very nascent stage of cloud computing. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of transactional activities to purchase cloud services, and we had this very discussion today among our leadership team about the smaller transactional deals within cloud computing. And part of that's the fear still mm-hmm. of really what am I getting? Is the security there? Can I afford it? When in fact, I think that people are starting to realize that more than just the mandate to go toward cloud computing, it's an inevitability because of the obvious savings.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, though. The life cycle aspect of it is people aren't quite there yet in terms of saving investing today to save for tomorrow in a big way.
Is this something, though, where the possibility exists that once you pull the cork out of the bottle, the champagne's going to go everywhere? Because we had GSA migrated, I want to say, 17, 20,000 users, something like that, in their organization. Now Interior is going to do 88,000. Is that a possibility, Tim, you think?
I believe it is. If you go back to the 90s when the internet was just taking off, it wasn't done at the time in one big burst.
Mm-hmm.
It was, how do you use it? What do I use it for? How do I take advantage of it? I see the same thing with cloud computing, is that it's going to take a couple different use cases. It's going to take a toe in the water. Many agencies or many CIOs aren't going to want to be the first. There's
mm-hmm.
some that are risk averse, more risk averse. So there's going to have to be those use cases that will show a path to others before the true adoption takes off.
All right. Well, I want to talk more about the as-a-service concept when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests from URS today are Tim May and Mark Gray. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
IT Professionals, the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council's Academy, is a unique interactive training and education program designed specifically for the federal IT community, both government and industry. Courses in leadership, best practices, and project management start soon, so don't wait. Register today at www.actgov.org/academy. That's www.actgov.org/academy.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
OPM Director John Barry says policy changes will incorporate lessons from past snow events.
We do have some changes that will be coming forward that will hopefully make it better. To the extent that we can arm our employees to be able to work effectively from alternative locations, that's better service to the taxpayer and allows them to do their jobs and keep the essential functions of government moving regardless of what the weather is.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My industry chatter guests today are Mark Gray and Tim May, both of them from URS, and we were talking about cloud computing in the last segment. And the whole concept of as a service is kind of mixes in with the cloud computing concept. Richard Spires talking the other day, or Jason Miller has a story on federalnewsradio.com where they're essentially, it sounds like they're going to pretty much everything as a service. And I imagine if an agency like DHS is willing to go that way, won't be long before we see other agencies saying, okay, if Richard can do it, we can do it too. Are you seeing that more, that concept more when it comes to the as a service stuff, where people are looking around, kind of like we talked about with cloud, people are looking around and going, well, tell me about what you're doing for this client over here, where it's more almost relational selling or relational education than it is the actual education on the technology itself. Does that question make sense,
sure.
Tim?
Go to this X as a service, mm-hmm. anything as a service. If you take a look at it, is we go back to what is anything as a service. You go back to the simple model of electricity. You know, it's I will use it, I'll consume it, and I'll pay for it whenever I need it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that in the cloud computing model as well, whether it be pure infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, and you're getting to, you know, VoIP as a service. All of these things are coming out as a service. And it goes back to a comment I made earlier. It's not about the number of engineers that I want managing my desktops, managing my platforms, or developing a piece of software. It's an expectation from the client that when I need something, I want to receive it. I want to receive the value, and then I want to be able to shut it off and I don't want to pay for it when I'm not using it.
Mm-hmm.
So this concept as a service, we're very much in tune with. Aptus was, before the acquisition by URS, we're very much in tune with it, thinking that we see it as certainly a differentiator than, I'll call it, the traditional putting bodies on a contract. Mm-hmm. What can we do that's unique that'll allow our client to get true value out of what we're delivering for them?
Mm-hmm. The as-a-service concept, is that an educational process the same way as cloud has been for a while, Mark?
It is, and I think the primary aspect of that education is that, you know, you don't own this. It's not right under you. It's a service that's provided to you. And the big hurdle, somewhat obviously, that you have to get over is that it's not physically in front of me. I can't reach out and touch it.
Is there still a lot of resistance to that? Because there's a lot of people that really like to be able to touch their own stuff.
There is, but there's a distinction. I would say among our federal or civilian agencies, there's less of a resistance.
Mm-hmm.
With our DOD clients, there's more of a resistance. And some of that reason is pretty obvious,
sure.
Intuitively. But in talking with a prominent client earlier this week, you know, they noted how they wanted to kind of migrate from this very private environment where they own their own stuff on their own premises to, okay, I don't own it, it's off-premise, but whatever this service that's provided is private. It's
mm-hmm.
only mine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready to bite off that chunk that I share part of a public domain yet.
Right.
So that's going to be incumbent upon us, is to help them through that evolution to the ultimate point of, you know, the service, it's really transparent where the service is.
Mm-hmm.
You just know you're getting it when you need it. You're not paying for it when you don't, and that it's absolutely secure.
The whole idea of whatever by the drink is I still, when I talk to folks, I still get a sense of discomfort, even we're, what, 3-4 years into the cloud concept, where companies like yours have really been actively promoting this to the federal government, and then Vivek comes in and says, yep, this is how we're going to do it. And yet I still feel that apprehension of, if I can't go hug my server, I'm just not quite sure.
Well, if I could go down, it may not just be the serveritis issue that we've called it, which is, you know, I have to, you know, just keep buying more servers.
Uh-huh.
I'll go to is the believability.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and what I mean by that is that you really mean that I'll only consume and buy what I use, and when I'm not consuming it, I don't have to pay for it. So there's a skepticism that is that really true?
We're back to too good to be true again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there is that. And in fact, I will tell you, even peers in our industry, peers in Mark and I's industry, our competitors, some of them, I believe, still don't understand that. The model that I will tell you, that AWS, that Amazon Web Services put out there 4 or 5 years ago, it was almost too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
On demand, you know, pay when I need it, use it when I need it. It self-service. It was it wasn't one of those models that I don't, you know, didn't really appreciate, or I can't comprehend that it's really happening now.
Mm-hmm. My guests on Industry Chatter today are Tim May and Mark Gray, both from URS, and our conversation will wrap up just a few minutes on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Nova Daily public policy consultant at Wiley Rhine commented during the panel discussion, the cybersecurity dilemma, incentives to drive change rather than reactive response.
It is a global playing field out there, and no matter whether your business is located in Iowa or Bangladesh or Beijing, you can be subject to the same vulnerabilities. Just a broad sphere and spectrum of ways that bad actors can get into your system is unbelievable.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. Today, computer attacks are more frequent, distributed, easy to mount, persistent, and disruptive than ever before. Some sectors are doing a better job than others in proactively addressing these concerns, though most do so following an attack. Booz Allen Hamilton believes that incentives which may or may not currently exist can stimulate greater corporate investment in proactive cybersecurity protection measures. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
How would you like up to $50 out of the blue? That's the wellness incentive from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Complete our Blue Health Assessment and get up to $50 for qualified medical expenses. $50 out of the blue. Who knew? To learn more about the Federal Employee Program, visit whoknew.fbpblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A, provided by EMC. Today's question, how can agencies manage security risks as they move to the cloud?
Agencies can deploy a governance, risk, and compliance solution from RSA, the security division of EMC, to identify and manage risks in the cloud and data center.
Would this be a part of agencies' continuous monitoring efforts?
That's right. RSA's Archer GRC platform provides a risk scoring and analysis tool to achieve continuous monitoring as cyber threats evolve.
Find out more at RSA.com, the security division of EMC.
Level 3 Communications enables federal agencies to be agile with scalable solutions like content delivery and SIP trunking. Be secure with cloud solutions, purpose-built for the federal government. Be prepared with best-in-class data center and storage area network solutions. Be connected to the company that invests in bringing their network direct to you. Level 3 services are available on Networks Enterprise and WITS 3 contracts. To learn more, visit level3.com/federal. Level 3. Think ahead.
Have you been in government contracting, procurement, or acquisition for 30 years? NCMA has. Join the National Contract Management Association for the 30th Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 14th and 15th in Bethesda, Maryland. The conference draws more than 1,000 government contract management professionals. Hear from respected speakers such as Scott Gould, Deputy Secretary, Department of Veterans Affairs, Martha Johnson, Administrator, GSA, and Shay Assad, Director, Defense Pricing, DOD. Learn more at ncmahq.org today.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests for Industry Chatter today are Mark Gray and Tim May of URS. And just about ready to wrap up, Tim. And by the way, gentlemen, I appreciate both of you coming in today. It's great to have you here and talk about these issues. Tim, as you look kind of long term, if we have this conversation a year, 2 years from now, where do you see your company doing business primarily, and where do you see the federal government interacting with you?
Okay. First, I'll hit the latter part first, is that I think the budget constraints that we're experiencing today are not going to end.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of that, there still is this emphasis on efficiency. How do I wring costs out but still get my mission accomplished, get my goals and objectives accomplished to service their particular stakeholders or constituent base? So I see that continuing. And it's probably also a little bit healthy, I have to say it, but you know, it's healthy from an industry perspective to take a look at how do you introduce efficiencies into the government. So mm-hmm. it's causing quite a bit of change there. From a corporate standpoint, what we see, what you know, I see as coming from Aptus, coming into URS, is that had the opportunity last week to spend time with senior leadership within URS at an offsite, and we saw a tremendous opportunity to bring the IT capabilities that we have into potentially the commercial client and state and local clients that URS has.
Mm-hmm.
So if you asked the question, where could it go? I think that's where we can go as a company.
Mark, what as far as working with the agencies moving forward, what do you see them being able to do to partner better with you?
Well, there's a couple of things. I'll address that quickly, and then I want to talk about what we can do better to make us a better partner as well. Tim touched upon it earlier. Earlier in more draft documentation on procurements, earlier communication, more frequent communication, better opportunity forecasting. If we know what's out there earlier and sooner, we can prepare better and we can prepare our offerings better.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as we touched upon earlier as well, Francis, a more explicit statement of what's important. Is it a low price technically acceptable or is it best value?
Yeah.
From our perspective, we have a responsibility as well. Number one, we have to have clearer capability offerings. We need to be able to explain what our offering is in cloud or in cyber in layman's terms that are meaningful and understandable. We also, it's incumbent upon us to have a better understanding of what's important to our clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to do our own homework. Is it price? Is it innovation? Is it the management approach? Is it our technical solution? What's the weighing among all those items? And then lastly is the offering of contract vehicles. We need to have a broad enough offering of contract vehicles that we can meet needs.
There is a lot more I'd like to cover and not enough time to do it, but I appreciate both of you being here today. It's been a great conversation. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Francis.
My guests, Mark Gray and Tim May of URS on Industry Chatter. You can hear the entire conversation posted later this afternoon on federalnewsradio.com. Hour number two of the program right around the corner. It's In-Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.